This is Phil Varin, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. You know, it's been a good week. It's been a busy week. More busy to come. I had a little bit of excitement. I do need to apologize just a little bit for this particular podcast because I don't have one stop to make. I have two stops to make. So I got to deposit my check and I got to get some gas. It's not the ideal time in the world to get gas because it's cold. Getting hit by another one of these polar vortex things. And it's 14 here, which is cold for Springfield, Missouri. Down and in the, I think it got down to the single digits last night. I don't think we hit zero, but it got down to the single digits Fahrenheit last night, and whew, that's cold for us. Supposed to do the same thing again tonight, and I'm supposed to be taking my dad grocery shopping first thing in the morning because I have a dental appointment tomorrow. So theoretically, I'm taking my dad grocery shopping at 7 in the morning tomorrow, and it's supposed to be 5 degrees. So I think probably what's going to happen is I'm going to say, you all just need to get your list together, and then I will come and I will do your grocery shopping for you. Because there's no point in them getting out in that kind of weather. So, got to get that done, then got to run to the dentist, get that done. And then I think maybe I'm going out with my parents-in-law tomorrow noon for my wife's birthday. She is going to be 57 tomorrow. She's not entirely thrilled about this birthday. She, you know, when you turn 50, you think, oh, 50, 50, and then it's 51, 52, 53, 54, 50, 50, 50, 55, 50, 50, 50, 56, 57. Now you're on the downside of it. See, now, dun, dun, dun. Now you are edging up to 60. And I don't think she's quite ready. She's quite ready for that. So she's, this particular one is bugging her a little bit. Of course, I'm trying to figure out, you know, how to be the good husband, and every time I ask her, well, do you want to just... So, anyways, okay, I'm at my first stop. I will be right back. Okay, so anyways, that's stop one. Stop two is I have to get some gas for my car. I didn't fill up when it was warmer, which wasn't a very good thing. Ugh, yeah, so it's okay. I can do it. I'm bundled up. I have on three jackets. My daughter laughs at me. She sees me when I have on my three jackets. She said, so you need another hoodie, Dad? I say, listen, this works great. Got lots of layers going. Keeps me warm. Get too warm, just peel a layer off. It's good stuff. Anyways, had some good conversations this week with friends. Really nice conversations this week. Going to talk about some of those. And been writing along. I actually got a little bit ahead last week. And this week it's been a little interesting. I kind of know where I'm going, but I'm in one of those bridge sections that you basically just have to get through that to get the plot explained to where you can get to, you know, more action stuff. And so I'm working my way through that. There's a lot of pieces that haven't quite settled in yet. And I'm really not expecting them to settle in until I get to the end of the book, because there's a few little character traits and things that I just need to see how it's going to play out. You know, see what it feels like over the long haul. Sometimes you start a little character trait and then you revisit it, and you revisit it through the book to kind of drill it in, and then you realize, you know, after about, you hear about this the second or third time, people are going to get really sick about hearing this, and so then you have to kind of tweak a little bit. But, you know, so far so good. It's interesting. It's very, very interesting. And it's made me think a lot about this whole idea of survival. And I've been having some conversations this week with friends about that, this idea of survival. We had a little thing come up, and life is, it's so interesting because my standard technique for when I come up against a problem is, okay, just slow down, you know, just walk your way through it one step at a time, and it will all work out. Just don't get nervous, don't get, you know, upset, just walk it out one step at a time. And so that's kind of my standard way. We closed the month of January on Tuesday. And so we have all kinds of processes that kick in then and run right at the end of the month to do a bunch of different stuff. So there was one particular process that used a couple of cash tables that we had not been cleaning out. Oops. And the great thing about SQL Server is that you can be going along just hunky-dory fine, and then it, like, crosses over a threshold, and it gets upset with you. And so this particular little process, the particular little step in the process, normally took about a minute or two to run. Had run the month before, a minute or two. It was fun. Tuesday night, I spotted it after it had been running for 40 minutes, and I thought, well, we'll just let it go a little longer and see what happens. And then the buddy who supports the stuff now, after I finished frightening it, he's been supporting it for several years now, he called me after it had been running for about 2 hours. And he said, yeah, he said, that one process is running really long. And I said, you know, I noticed it at about 40 minutes, but it's still going, still going. So I go downstairs, check, sure enough, still going. So I talked to him, and we discussed, and I said, something is scaled out. And I do some quick checks on the tables, and sure enough, we weren't cleaning up all the tables we should have, and so... You know, so after we discussed it for a while, I said, well, if we want to stop it, what we got to do is we're going to have to clean out. We're going to have to, you know, kill it. Then we're going to have to go in, clean out those tables, rerun those processes, walk out those processes to the end of the major step we're on, then restart the automated job at that step. You know, it'll be multi, but I said, we can do that. So we talked, and there's so many people that depend on this information that we just decided, okay, yeah, that's it. We're going in. We're going in, we're going to walk it through. So, you know, the whole time I'm working on this, of course, you know, the flesh is going, oh, you're not going to be able to figure this out. People are going to be disappointed in you. It's going to be terrible. They're going to look down on you. You know, all that stuff that you go through. Long story short, we got in there, you know, after I had decided, okay, we're just going to, I'm getting bundled up because I'm getting ready to put some Gazool in my car. And I'm going to get bundled up. I'll finish this story real quick, though. So, long story short, we get there, and we're just getting ready to punch the button. I mean, we are literally a minute away from pushing the button to kill it all and then having to walk through all this, and we refresh the operations log, and it's like, ping, there it is. Hey, it got fast. So we're like, just be a little patient. But then after that, then we just, you know, stayed and watched it for a little while and just let it walk itself out, and everything finished fine. Everything was great. It's an amazing thing. Sometimes you think, oh, it's going to be so terrible, and then it just walks out. Okay, be right back. Got to get some gas. Okay, so I'm back on the road for this very interrupted podcast. Sorry about that. In the meantime, I also got a call from my parents. My dad, he's 91. He wasn't too thrilled about getting out in the cold, as I didn't think he would be tomorrow morning. So I'm just going to grab their grocery list and then run by there and do their grocery shopping for them and get that taken care of. So anyways. So, you know, you think something's going to be like a big deal. You don't know what the problem is, but you just walk through it. And it works out. And it's interesting how your attitude really does help or harm your work experience, your life experience. It's interesting how your expectations and how your behavior flows out of those expectations can really affect the quality of your life. I watched an interesting program, and before I get started here, this is not like The Secret. I don't know if you've read The Secret, but it's basically you can just imagine your way into a better life, that if you just believe things are going to happen, that they're just going to happen to you. Well, I'm not saying that, but I am saying that there is something to approaching life with vitality and bravery and calmness and love and kindness and optimism. There is something that makes life worth living, at least for me. Because I've known people who just go through life with kind of a cloud over their head, and I understand. I've had a wonderful upbringing, and I haven't had that background, and I'm blessed. I understand all those things. But I also understand that the people who move through life with a little more optimistic viewpoint, they seem to enjoy a little better quality of life. Now, plenty of artists will tell you that you need a little suffering in your life to actually be a good artiste. And it is true that a lot of very talented people do some really great artwork out of their pain. Okay, I get that. But as I observe and as I move through life, it just seems to me that having a more optimistic outlook, having a pleasant disposition, there's a benefit to that. So, anyways, I watched this program yesterday. I've watched a bunch of TED Talks, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll talk about that. Oh, maybe I'll talk about that. Oh, maybe I'll talk about that. And then I watched this program on YouTube last night, specifically last night, and I thought, oh, I need to talk about that, because it had kind of dovetailed into what a buddy of mine and I had talked about earlier this week. We've had this constant discussion, he and I have, about this really interesting construct that life is, where we are all, whether we are aware of it or not, trying to answer the big question. And the big question is there really something out there or isn't there? Is there something beyond this life or not? Is there a God or not? And my answer to him has been about my own experiences, you know, the whispers that I experience from God. But beyond all that, too, my answer to him has been, you know, I've watched people now live for lots of years. I've watched people live all different kinds of ways. And from what I have seen and from what I have experienced, it seems to me that even if there was no God, even if there was nothing after this life, I would still live this same way. I would live as if there is a God. I would live a life of kindness and love and gentleness and mercy and gracefulness. I would live a life of circumspection and a life of calm, because I gain such benefit right now from living that way that it doesn't really matter whether there's a payoff on the end, because my life is better today. So we've been having those kinds of discussions. And once I saw this program, I thought, yeah, that's actually pretty interesting. So the program was done by Darren Brown. I have mentioned him before on the podcast, but it's been a little while since I've talked about him. Darren Brown is the United Kingdom's version of David Copperfield, although he's not really David Copperfield. He's more of a mentalist than he is a magician. But he does some really, really interesting stuff. Some of it's just showmanship. Some of it is pure mentalism and pure experiments about behaviors and about life. And it's very, very, very fascinating. So he did a series of four programs called The Experiments. And you can see them on YouTube. You can probably also rent them as well, but they don't seem to be taking them down off of YouTube, so I guess it's okay to watch them there. So in this particular program, he was dealing with luck. And specifically, he named the program The Secret of Luck. And he wanted to see how the idea of luck and the supposition of luck and the belief in luck affected people. And so he found this little town, and it's spelled Todd Morden. But I think they pronounce it Todd Moden. Anyway, I don't know. Found this little town, nice, cute little town. And in this little town, there was a little park. And in this little park, there was a stone statue of a dog. Not a great stone statue, but a perfectly respectable stone statue of a dog. So he sends in this reporter. And the reporter just goes around interviewing people, and she basically says, "So have you heard anything about the lucky dog?" And everybody's, "No," because there is no lucky dog. But she keeps asking this question, "Have you heard anything about the lucky dog?" And then he has her get seven people from all different walks of life, you know, barber and a butcher, and, well, barber's a hairstylist, butcher, toy manufacturer, painter, just from all different styles of life. And she has them come out to the park and pat the dog and rub the dog's head. And then she says, "I'll be back in 2 weeks." So she comes back in a couple of weeks and she interviews them and says, "So did you, you know, have you experienced anything that you'd consider to be good luck since you rubbed the dog's head?" And some of them, ta-ta, actually had. Which is, I mean, you would expect that. Just law of averages. So, in fact, you know, some of them had. One person had gotten a job and one had figured out something else they could sell. And another person had
the toy store
owner had actually had a lady come in with this vintage toy that she wanted to sell him. And so, yeah, I mean, it's like they're all sitting around saying, "Yeah, this is pretty, you know, it might be luck." So they're saying, "Okay, it might be." One guy, nothing. Butcher, he's the butcher, nothing. I mean, he's just, because he considers himself unlucky, and his brother's the lucky one, nothing's ever worked out for him. Nothing. Okay, so then the reporter takes like five of these seven people who are all happen to be women, and she takes them out to kind of one of the local boardwalk places that have games of chance and all that kind of stuff. And Darren Brown goes with them incognito. He's just in the crowds watching. Before they go, they all rub the head of the lucky dog. Then they go and they start playing all these games of chance. And Darren Brown said, what I expected to happen was I expected them to win about what the average would be, but then to feel like they were more lucky. He said, in fact, that's not what happened. In fact, they did win more than you would expect, because they seemed to be more focused and they played the games for longer, and they walked out of there with all kinds of prizes. He said, and that was very interesting to me. So then on the flip side, well, and there was one other thing they did that was interesting. The reporter went back into the town and picked two pub owners and told these two pub owners, which at one point he called them publicans, which I thought, okay, that's an English term, publicans. The reporter went back in and asked these two publicans to come out at different times to rub the head of the dog and see if anything lucky would happen to them. So they did. On the walk back, they arranged, the reporter didn't walk back with them, but they arranged to have a semi-famous comic have a flat tire with his personal assistant, and she asked them if they can help her, you know, with the flat tire. And it's all prearranged that if they do help her with the flat tire, that the comedian is going to give the person that helps them with the flat tire a free comedy show. They were just going to come back and do a free comedy show one night at their pub. So the first guy comes and the personal assistant says, I'm so sorry, it's my first day on the job and I don't know anything about this. Do you know anything about changing a tire? And he just says, well, there's a tire shop right around the corner. They can help you. Just go around there and they'll help you. Well, honestly, it's just around the corner. It's right there. Just go around the corner and they'll help you. And so then he goes on. And the second pub owner comes by, who happens to be a lady. And the little gal does her speech again. And I need to slow down because I'm almost home and there's still patches of ice. Oh, there was one of them. And if I get slowed down where there isn't a patch of ice, then there isn't going to be a problem. This is better. I was going a little too fast, because if there's a patch of ice right on the corner, I was never going to get turned. Okay, so the lady publican comes by, and she says, well, I don't know. She said, but just a second, let me get someone. I know someone who does, he'll help you. So she brings the guy out, and the guy helps him get it pumped up and all that kind of stuff, and so they're very, very thankful. And then, of course, the comedian says, so do you own a pub here? And she says, yes. She says, you know, or he said something like, so are you a business owner? And she said, yeah. She said, I own the Lord's House or something, or something. I forget what the name was. Jack's House. The Lord's House. It was Jack's House. She owns this pub called Jack's House. And so he says, well, I'll come do a free show for you. Oh, really? Yeah, I'll come do a free show for you. Well, thank you. Okay, so he packs this place out. Hundreds of people come, and it's just a small pub. Hundreds of people come. The customers are handing drinks to other customers because there's nobody to deliver the drinks. They don't have nearly enough staff. And this lady, obviously, she made a killing that night. And they're talking about how this was the lucky dog. She went and patted the lucky dog, and then she ran into this guy. It's the lucky dog. Okay, I'm getting my mail. So, of course, after this, then some other reporters start picking up these stories and start, start reporting on the lucky dog. And sure enough, the stories start taking off. And they had planted a hidden camera. And sure enough, people start coming by and start patting the head of the lucky dog. This takes all about 3 months. Oh, and during that time, they've got this unlucky guy, the butcher, you know, he's unlucky. And Darren Brown decided he was going to play some experiments on this guy, do some experiments. So, for instance, he had the reporter take a whole bunch of leaflets and stick a scratcher's ticket in bin and then drop them in his mailbox before the guy got there in the morning. And the scratcher's ticket was rigged. All he had to do was scratch the stuff off and he would have gotten a free TV. Just like that. He threw the ticket away. Didn't even scratch it up. So the next thing they do is they have a survey taker. I'm backing into my garage. I'll talk louder. They have a survey taker that asks people, it's only one question, can you name 5 cuts of meat? Of course, the guy's a butcher, so he wouldn't have any problem with that. People who do, she gives them like 20 quid. Boom, just like that. So the butcher comes by, because they've set this up just for this. The butcher comes by, and she says, could I ask you, I'll be back in just like 5 minutes. I'll be back. Okay. So he walks off. He never comes back. So then they take a 50-pound note and they put it on the sidewalk right in front of where he's going to walk. He comes around the corner. He walks right past it. He doesn't even see it. Finally, they got a truck with one of those A-frame signs on it. This huge truck with this A-frame sign. It said, Wayne, call this number. And they had to run it by him several times. Two times, three times, I don't know. In different places. Wayne, call this number. Finally, he calls the number. And because he calls the number, then they set up to, talk with him later. So Darren Brown then decides it's getting about time. So he comes to the town and he starts talking to people because he's heard, quote unquote, about this lucky dog. And he wants to do an experiment in this town about to see if this dog is really lucky. And so what he says he's going to do is they're going to put out these boxes and people can fill out these forms and say how much they're willing to risk for one roll of the die. And the person that's willing to risk the most is going to be the one that's going to be able to do it. So most people, they bet 10 pounds, 20 pounds, 20, says, okay. There's one guy, 1,000 pounds. And he put in parentheses behind it, my life's savings. And Darren Brown, when he was talking to the crowd that had gathered at City Hall to do this, he said, I tell you, I was taken aback when I saw who this was. And he said, it's Wayne, the butcher. And Wayne's wife was there, and he asked Wayne, so he said, does your wife know about this? And he says, well, she does now. Because one roll of the die, and if the number doesn't come up, he's going to lose everything. It's going to go to one of Darren's charities. But it's basically, Darren said, you roll the die, if your number comes up, you'll receive 6 times whatever you wagered. So you get your 1,000 pounds back, plus you get another 5,000 pounds. So he says, yeah, I want to do this. And he says, well, why? He said, when you came and talked to me, because Darren had, he'd come and talked to him at one point, since he finally had called the number, he came and talked to him, and he said, Wayne, you've said you're not lucky at all, but look what we tried to do. And you might just consider that maybe what's going on in your life is you just don't take advantages of the opportunities. And Wayne said, I'm going to take advantage of this opportunity. I've let too many things pass by. I'm going to change. To his credit. I don't know about betting your life savings, but to his credit. So, of course, it's very dramatic. The town had constructed this little plastic chute where the die was going to go down. And so Wayne comes up with his wife, with his daughter. And Wayne gives him his 1,000 pounds. They put it in the box. He gives Wayne the die. Darren Brown has the crowd pick the number. He just says, pick a number from 1 to 6. How many picked 1? How many picked 2? How many picked 3? How many picked 4? Oh, okay, everybody picked 4. It's 4. How many picked 5? How many picked 6? It's 4. So decide on 4. Then he has the guy go up the ladder, and he says, all right, he said, you can roll the dice 4 times. Which one is going to come up with the right number? And the guy said, number 3. He said, all right, let's go. So he rolls it the first time. It comes up like 2. Rolls it the second time. It comes up 6. Rolls up the third time. And it comes up 4. And it's like, yo, I mean, now it was 1 in 6 chance, okay? And it did come up. And I'm not saying that this guy's expectation caused the number 4 to come up. I'm not saying that. I have had situations in my life was like I flashed forward into the future and I saw something that I knew it was going to be that way. I was playing cribbage with, well, I wasn't playing cribbage. I was watching cribbage between my son-in-law and my daughter at one point. And I was trying to kind of learn too. And my son-in-law had like, oh, I forget what it was. He had a couple of face cards and a couple of ones. And there was one card that he should have, under normal circumstances, should have thrown away. And I walked up, and so he was kind of teaching me, and I said, no, that's not what I'd do. And I said, I'd keep these two cards, which were like the two face cards, and these two cards, which were the ones. And he looked at me because if he had done that, he wouldn't have been able to make 15s at all, which in cribbage, you have to make 15s if I've got the right game. And he just kind of looked at me like, why would you do that? And I pointed to the top of the deck. I said, because that card's a 4. And he looked at me and he pulled it over and it was a 4. I hadn't shuffled the deck. I hadn't done anything, but it was just like, I looked at it and it was just like, yeah, this is what's going to happen. What was interesting, though, because I got to wrap this up because I'm going long. What was interesting to me about this particular show, though, was at the end. Because, in essence, Darren Brown tricked all these people in this town into believing that that dog was lucky. And that was a false belief. And yet, it made a difference in the town. And, in fact, one of the last quotes on there, a lady said, even though it were not real, good things came out of it. And that's, you know, at the bottom of it all, when you're trying to figure out, is there something rather than nothing? For me, that's really what it comes down to. That even if it's not true, good things come out of it. Being gentle and kind and merciful and gracious and believing that there is something higher than yourself that is watching out for you and is helping you and will assist you and give you wisdom. There is a connectedness. There is a hope that generates internally that is extremely useful to carry in this life. So even if it's not true, good comes out of that. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.